The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We say hello to you on this Thursday. Great to have all of you here. We have a lot to do, and Heather Dinich is waiting to report to us live from Chicago, where there are very important meetings going on. There's important stuff happening in Washington as well. We begin with the conversation we've been having now for the better part of a week, and that concerns the CFP. This is from Forbes magazine. They don't write about sports very often. Headline, bad news for those from planet Earth. College football playoff will expand from 4 to 12 to infinity. How many is infinity? And will that get UCF in? Meanwhile, the CFP is announcing some changes for its selection committee. As most of you know, everyone moves off and on there after a set number of years. And former Irish player Rod West will replace Ray Odinero on the CFP committee. So who is on this committee that will determine who goes to the college football playoff? Mitch Barnhart, remember, he was the head of the men's basketball committee. Barta is there. He was the chairman of it, still is. Professor from ASU, AD from Wyoming, Georgia State, NC State, Texas AD. Looks pretty familiar so far. I don't see any of our callers on there. The Colorado AD, former lineman from Nebraska, R.C. Slocum, Joe Taylor from Virginia Union, Rod West, he's now the president of Entergy, and a former Ohio State lineman. Is that America right there or not? Meanwhile, speaking of America, Rose Bowl, remember last year they couldn't even conduct a game. This year they'll have 100% capacity for the first game of the year out there. That is LSU and UCLA. That is a home game for UCLA. And folks, when California goes to 100%, that means we can quit talking about COVID. Speaking of the College World Series, it begins in 2 days. And the Knoxville News Sentinel is trying to draw a straight line between this Tennessee team and 1998. For those of you who weren't born in 1998, that is the last time Tennessee football did something important. The ESPYs are out. Devontae Smith could win one. Other players as well. Bama is up for the best team. That comes as no surprise. Smith up for a breaking performance. Madison Lilly from the best collegiate athlete from the women's sports. Metcalf and Derrick Henry as the best NFL player. Still no best Feinbaum caller. Jimmy Kimmel's not doing well enough with a late night show on ABC. Now he's getting a bowl game named after him in Los Angeles. I wonder what he spent, or did they have to pay him? Anyway, are there any bowl games in the South that do not have names? Has the Birmingham Bowl ever gotten a name? I can't remember. We had this conversation many years ago, the Feinbaum Caller Bowl, or we could just make it the I-Man Bowl. I don't know. It's a good idea, though, and I'm not sure anyone is going to be overly concerned about that game, but with Jimmy Kimmel's name on it, at least we'll get promotion on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Let's talk about what we are doing here today, and Heather Dinich probably deserves a championship game named after her, as well as she covers the CFP. Ross Dellinger got the assignment again today. He was in Congress. That's not a good assignment. Bruce Feldman from The Athletic on some of the most important players of the year, and Cole Kublik later on as well on the SEC football season, which, hey, folks, is just around the corner. Your phone calls are welcome here at 855-242-7285, and why don't we just quit talking and start listening? How about John starts it off in Louisville, Kentucky? Hello, John.
Hey, great introduction today. I enjoy listening to you talk, by the way. And Heather Dinich should be up for an ESPY, too, for what she's doing the last several weeks.
I agree.
Anyways, as much as I enjoy your guests, I enjoy the callers, and particularly the new ones. They're always interesting. They're from around the country, and they're always polite. And the regular ones, like Squirrel and Catfish and Larry and I haven't heard from Chris from Gulfport. I think it's an old friend of yours. He's always enjoyable to listen to as well.
Yeah, Chris from Gulf Shore is one of the oldest, I don't mean in terms of dog years. I'm talking about just in terms of longevity on the show. We have not heard from Chris lately, but he is always one of the most hilarious callers. I've gotten to know Chris fairly well over the years, and we'll see if we can get him back.
Yeah, I can tell the way you two laugh. Much better than the gentleman from Ohio who seems to be angry all the time. But anyways, my question, I have two questions, one on media day, but the first is, what's the status on Larry? I may have missed it, but, you know, he was going in for a procedure some weeks back.
John, it's a good question. We have not heard. I think we should know something soon. We will put out an SOS to Larry's people, or at least at the hospital there, and maybe somebody can give us an update. Thanks for asking that.
It's not the same without him laughing and talking about smoking doobies, I'll tell you.
No, so, not at all.
So my question on media days, when is it, and it, will it be live where you'll be down there interviewing people one-on-one?
Yes, it will. The plan right now, media days starts, I believe, a month from now. And unless I missed the memo, this program will be there live in living color.
That'll be great. I want to see all these new coaches up close and personal. I'll put it on my calendar. Thanks today, and have a great day yourself.
Thank you very much, John. Appreciate the call. So, yeah, a media days. Let me get you the exact date here on my trusty calendar. Media days begins on July 19th. So essentially a month from now. We will take a break. Heather Dinich is right around the corner, live from Chicago. She will tell us everything that has been going on there throughout the day and what to expect tomorrow. Your phone calls continue here at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We are back and trying to get some more information on what has been happening today in Chicago, where most of the key players in the CFP are currently meeting, and Heather Dinich has moved on to Chicago, covering the story, of course, for all of us. Heather, thank you for the time, and I know you've been there all day. What has been going on? What do we know?
Well, Paul, we know that the 10 FBS commissioners and Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick began their meetings this afternoon. It's possible they could continue their meetings later this evening. I've been speaking to some people who are in the room, and they have told me that there's a good foundation, that the proposal that they was released last Thursday was very thoughtful, and there is some initial support from some very powerful people about the 12 teams, but it's the nitty-gritty that they're going to get into this afternoon. afternoon and more tomorrow morning. In terms of the top four seeds, does everybody agree that they don't get any home games? Does everybody agree that the first round is at home? How do their university presidents in each conference feel that there could be 17 games played? They'll talk about the calendar. They will talk about the bowls and how they are integrated into those things. There were some commissioners who went into these meetings thinking that this could be done before the contract expires. We're entering the eighth season of a 12-year contract, and some people think it can be done before then. Some people are not as convinced. So that's what they're talking about this afternoon and tomorrow morning. But I would be surprised, Paul, if they left here and didn't agree on 12. But the very first thing they have to talk about is the number of teams.
Yeah, Heather, let's talk about when this starts, because I remember we were together yesterday on ESPN, and that's a big deal, because with all of this momentum, and you know, people are praising it and raving about it, but if we hear from these people in a couple of weeks or months, and they say, well, you know, this is the plan, but it doesn't happen until 4 or 5 years down the road, many people think that's a real issue. So take us through what has to happen to make this sooner rather than later.
Well, what has to happen is the very first thing is, here at these meetings in Chicago, they have to come to a consensus on the plan. And if they do, if they agree on the basis of a format, 12 teams, whatever it might be, the next Tuesday in Dallas on June 22nd, they would then present it to the 11 university presidents and chancellors who comprise the CFP's board of managers. Those are the people with the power to change the playoff. But at that point next Tuesday, if the presidents and chancellors give the commissioners green light, it's simply to do more work, to use the summer to figure out more specifics. How do the bowls tie in? All of those things I just spoke about. And then they would come back in September for another meeting. And September is the earliest point. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. These conversations could continue for much longer after September. But September is the earliest point that there could be an official announcement saying, yes, we're going to expand the playoff. Here's when, and this is what it's going to look like.
So, Heather, take us inside this room. Who runs this meeting? And you said consensus, but you have a lot of varying opinions. I mean, how do they come to a conclusion?
Well, there's also a lot of egos in the room, conference-sized ones, I would go so far as to say. And how they get to a consensus is the same way, you know, anyone else does sitting around a boardroom table. Nothing else has changed. They're still meeting. And I would say that people have to remember there were four people on the working group who spent 2 years coming up with this plan. There are 11 people total in the room looking at it for the first time together in person. That's significant. As Jack Swarbrick told me after the national championship last year, this isn't a Zoom conversation, right? So to be able to sit down and hash it out and go over those details, like I said, that's why somebody told me this might not happen in September in terms of figuring everything out and all the details. It could take longer than that. But just to be clear, Executive Director Bill Hancock has said it's not happening this year or next year. So formally a change, and seeing the system change, the earliest that would happen is 3 years from now.
Yeah, Heather, I get all that, but this thing sounds fairly organized to me. I mean, you had this release a couple of months ago, the teaser, and then we had last week, and then we had a conference call. So it's hard for some people to believe that even though all these new voices are in the room, that they're going to buck the power brokers who came up with this, and I'm curious what you think about that. Yeah, there may be disagreement, there may be conversations, but mm-hmm. but how are these things going to be changed though, and what would lead somebody to believe that it's the proposal that we've all read about and talked about will be undone?
Well, no, you're right. You make a great point, and I agree with you. And there have been people who have told me it's going to be hard to walk that back now that it's out there, right? But at the same time, everyone has to understand the process and has to understand that there's university presidents and chancellors who have to sign off on this. They care about the academic calendar. They care about the possibility of student athletes playing 17 games. So those are conversations that have to be had. I will tell you, like I said, I'll be surprised if everyone leaves Chicago and doesn't come to a consensus on 12 teams. But it's so many other things. I mean, the things that they're talking about in there go as deep a dive as home game tickets. How do you allocate that? How many does the away team get, right? All of those things have to be considered. Do we want to bring teams on the road from Georgia to East Lansing, Michigan in January or whatever it might be? I mean, those are deep dives, and they're going to continue to talk about that. It's not the foundation. I haven't spoken to anyone who's in that room who is wishy-washy on 12. There might be. That I'm not saying that there's not. I'm saying nobody's told me I don't like 12, but I will tell you that people have said, I want to know more. I want to know more about how it's going to work, exactly what it's going to look like, and oh, by the way, how much money are we going to get out of it?
And that's where I want to go next as we continue with Heather Dinich in Chicago, because Heather, you know, there's a big component of this that we don't really know about, and it's interesting because we both work for ESPN. But it would seem to me that they're going to play a big role in all of this. We had John Orand on here yesterday, the media reporter and columnist for Sports Business Journal, and he said he had heard, he's a reporter, that the network's enthusiasm for this current plan wasn't that high. Maybe that's posturing, maybe it's not, because it is going to cost a lot more money. And he argued, I'm just relating what he had to say, and you know, John, that where that first weekend comes, it's just not that valuable a day of college football before Christmas when bowl games are already on the table. So how does that part of the puzzle get solved at some point, the network part of the puzzle?
You know, my pay grade isn't at that level, right? But that's part of the equation. I mean, I was told that they didn't even go to ESPN until they have a plan. And as we sit here right now, they definitively don't have a plan. So, I don't have the answer as to what ESPN TV executives are thinking about this because I haven't spoken to them about it. But that being said, I've talked to people in that room who wanted to open the door to more networks, get other television partners in the conversation, or at least explore that opportunity. So absolutely a factor, as is how the Rose Bowl and Orange Bowl and Sugar Bowl and those contract bowls factor into that. That all ties together.
Heather, you're in Chicago, the home of the Big Ten, and the reason I bring that up is that there are those who theorize, and everyone's got a different theory, that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the Rose Bowl are really going to be the biggest obstacles in making this happen. We've always feared that, and then we heard this last week and go, well, that's great, everybody's on the same page, but you know, they may be on the same page moving down the road, but what are you hearing in terms of the Big Ten, especially on unwinding this Rose Bowl situation now? Because that's a very valuable time slot, as we all know.
Well, it is, and I'm eager to ask Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren what he thinks about that, because those partnerships and that historic loyalty to the Rose Bowl, again, is a part of the conversation, and I wish I had a better answer for you on it, but that's one of the things that they're going to be talking about. And when I said that each conference has their own agenda, so to speak, in there, that's part of the Big Ten's alliance and allegiances, is that tie-in with the Rose Bowl. Same for the Pac-12, as you mentioned. But we've also heard the new Pac-12 commissioner and Larry Scott talk about how beneficial expansion would be to that conference. And I've spoken to university presidents and athletic directors and coaches in that conference who are all for not only expansion, but they are ready for those early kickoffs and whatever else they can do to get on TV.
Yeah, it almost seems like, Heather, the Big Ten may not want to change, but you know, if the Pac-12 doesn't change soon, there may not be a Pac-12 to worry about. I'm not suggesting you ask them that, but I'm just making an observation. Well, so they're meeting right now. You said they could meet tonight. What's the schedule again, and what do we expect to hear when this thing ends sometime tomorrow?
That's right. So I would expect them to go to maybe 5 o'clock Central Time here, and if they have to come back, they could have another meeting scheduled around 9 p.m. if they need it, and then they're supposed to come back early tomorrow morning and finish by noon, and then I'm expecting CFP Executive Director Bill Hancock will have some sort of a media briefing to let us know what happened. I'm not the only reporter here. Ralph Russo is sitting over here from the Associated Press, and I know Nicole Auerbach is here from the Athletic. So there are other reporters here from across the nation ready to see what happens tomorrow.
And just as a point of observation here, you are at the Big Ten headquarters. Is that what I see behind you?
That's correct. I'm in the lobby right off the main entrance of the Big Ten offices, and they are upstairs.
Okay. Big Ten headquarters, place I've never been before. Well, Heather, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow if there is any news or if you're still around. Thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thanks, Paul.
Heather Dinich, live from the Big Ten headquarters, where nearby the commissioners are meeting. Chicago in June, not a bad place to go. One of the few months you can go to Chicago and enjoy yourself. We will take a break. We are coming back with more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We'll find out what happened in Washington, D.C. today. Ross Dellinger a little bit off and a little bit later in the program, and more of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back, and glad you are with us. Let's get to the calls at 855-242-7285. Mark is up next in Memphis. So hello, Mark.
Hey, Paul.
Hey there.
So I have a couple of questions for you. You've been very outspoken on the recent years. So I just wanted to have your opinion. So say, hypothetically, in 2014, instead of doing a four-man team playoff, they just, you know, went out and started off with a 12-man team playoff. Would your opinion or view on Harbaugh and his success at Michigan be wavered at all if he had made the playoffs a couple of times in those years?
Yeah, I think you'd probably have to adjust that, because the playoff is ultimately, you know, how you determine someone's worth. And he would have made it a couple of times. I still think ultimately, though, Mark, you could make the playoffs and still never beat your rival, and I think it would come back to haunt you, because, you know, it is a good way of looking back. But my issue with Harbaugh is the Ohio State game, the fact that the divide between the two schools is getting wider, and the fact the program isn't progressing. And, you know, yeah, if he, you know, you could say, well, he made the playoff a couple of years ago. Well, what's he doing now? In college football, it's not about what you've done or did. It's about what your trajectory is. You know, how do you project? Because recruiting is built on the future. It's like a stock price. You know, if Apple's stock price was, you know, 275 4 years ago, and it's sitting at three today, they'll have a new CEO. I mean, obviously, it's one of the most successful companies in the world. I'm just using them as an example. But it's not about what you did. It's about what you're doing and will do in the future. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Peyton is up next in Nashville. Hello, Peyton.
And that CEO of Apple is an Auburn graduate. Isn't
he, Tim Cook, he sure is. Wonderful guy.
Well, I just saw where Auburn and Miami just scheduled a home-and-home back in 2029, 2030, I believe. Hey, what do you think about that?
Can't wait.
Well, I got a hot take for you, man. I'll be honest. I think – look, I'm an Auburn fan, so I want to preface that before I say this. And Nick Saban is probably the greatest coach of all time. I mean, I'll be honest. But on a college football Saturday, I'm pretty sure I could coach the Crimson Tide to a victory. I don't think Saban does that much. I think if you're coaching a bunch of five-stars and you got NFL talent, you don't have to do anything. You just go out there, and let him play. I don't think Saban does that much to get as much credit as he deserves on Saturday. Now, he did when he had to build the program up, and he is to an extent still, but I don't think he deserves this much reckoning that he gets when he's surrounded by a mega cast of a five-star talent. I just don't think on a Saturday he does that much for a W. I think it's the players that he's coaching. I mean, that happens on the practice field. It's him that's instilling.
Okay, Peyton. Hold on a second. You've done your perfunctory. Nick Saban's the greatest, which you know you didn't want to say, but you just said that as a preamble to what you got through saying. A couple of questions for you, and just answer me. You know, without a lot of gobbledygook. You say Nick Saban doesn't do very much on Saturday. Those players that he's coaching, who recruited those players?
Don't give me a –
you've already made your speech. I'm asking you questions. You answer my questions, okay? Who recruited those players?
Nick Saban.
Those coaches that coached those players on Saturday, who hired those coaches?
Nick Saban hired those coaches.
Okay. So he doesn't do anything, although he recruited the players and he put the personnel in that coaches them. I'll clean this up because this is a family show, but what is your freaking point?
The 60-minute window from when that ball is kicked to when the game's over, Saban's not doing anything during that time. It's the players that are doing it all. He doesn't have to make that many adjustments. They're gonna take care of all that for him. He doesn't have to do much. I was hearing the other day, he's more of a figurehead at this point, a CEO kind of coach. He's not really doing that much on a Saturday to help get Alabama to a victory. All the stuff he did before that Saturday is what made the victory happen.
Now Peyton, how long have you been working on this thesis here?
It came to my mind about a week ago.
Okay.
And I figured out finally.
When it came to your mind, you live in Tennessee, okay?
Yeah.
I am not familiar. I used to live there. I was born there, but I went to school there, but I don't live there any longer. So I ask you this question, and maybe you know the answer or maybe you don't, but is marijuana legal in Tennessee?
No, it is not.
Okay. So then am I to assume or am I not to assume that when you came to this conclusion, you were using an illegal substance?
No, I've actually been sober since October 13th from alcohol and marijuana.
Okay. Okay.
That doesn't mean my time out in California didn't help me come to this conclusion.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your honesty. You didn't have to volunteer that. I wasn't really asking you about your past.
I was asking you about a week ago Saturday.
When you came to this conclusion, were you listening to any mind-altering psychedelic music from the late 60s?
No, we do listen to some Doobie Brothers now and then.
Okay.
But that was not on.
So you were, okay, just for the record, you were listening to the Doobie Brothers, but you were not smoking a doobie.
Right. That is 100% correct, Paul. But like I said, I don't know if my time in California may be coming up.
Was that long train running? Was that long train running heading for you as you were thinking of this?
It might have been, or it might have been my orange and blue goggles I had on.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but I'm just saying.
First of all, Peyton, it is great to have you back on the show. And just when you think, just when you think you've heard it all, there's Peyton. William, I know you're calling from Tennessee. Are you calling as Peyton's legal representative or not?
No, because I don't. Doing cases involving insanity, Paul. that was the dumbest call I've ever heard in my life. That's like saying that Tim Cook or Steve Jobs, because they didn't put the case on the back of your Apple phone, shouldn't get credit for the Apple iPhone. What that gentleman said was just mind-boggling, and your retort was good, and I didn't hear part of it, but that just, you know, it takes a team of people to be successful, and And part of that is making sure that people play the roles and stay in the lanes that are necessary to complete the vision. But you have to come up with the vision.
Well, listen, I thought he was honest. And just for the record, I've talked to the guy before. I was not trying to make I had forgotten that he had had some issues in the past. So in no way was I ever, and you know this, William, because you're a friend of mine, would I have ever tried to make an example out of somebody's past issues. I was just simply asking what I thought was a current day question, because there's no other.
And again, if I'm off base, because I don't know what his issues are, because I didn't hear that part of the call. It's just you've got to look at the big.
Well, he had admitted to me once on the show that he had had some substance abuse, or I think it was alcohol abuse, and I had not remembered that until I was not asking. I was just making a joke about the medical marijuana, because it's in the news. Oh. Every state is, not every state, but a lot of states are dealing with that right now.
Well, again, but the thought process of saying that Saban's fingerprints aren't on every aspect of Alabama is just a little mind-boggling to me. And I have not been using any medical marijuana.
Well, truthfully, I have been, and that's why I was so calm during that call.
Well, you know, it's legal in Alabama now, so you need to move back, Paul.
Well, I have just called my a realtor, and now that I found that out, so I'm on my way to sweet home Alabama.
I'm stuck in Tennessee, where they're still talking about it. But be that as it may, and I wish that gentleman well. But my goodness, you know, just because Tim Cook doesn't. Put the last screw in your iPhone doesn't mean that he's not leading the team.
I will tell you a funny story. I know Tim Cook moderately well, and I was at a dinner party with him at Auburn. I've run into him quite a few times at Auburn, and he told me a story of a guy. Well, no, he didn't tell me. I saw it firsthand. I mean, we were talking about Apple, and we were sitting it together with his nephew, and I was asking him about Steve Jobs, who was his hero and mentor. And a guy that worked at CBS was at the party as well, and he came over to our table, and he literally asked Tim Cook about the battery in the iPhone, because his wife's battery had gone out. I just wanted to say, buddy, get lost, okay? I mean, we're talking about things that are, existential moments of my life, having this conversation, and. The guy could have gone into any Apple store in America and asked that question. We will take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back, and let's check in with Will, who is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Will.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much.
I was watching your show a week or two when your best friend, Mike Griffin, was on. And I understand. I know who pays his bills and everything, but I was driving past his house yesterday, and I looked and seen that his pet dog was a blue tick hound. It wasn't even a bulldog.
Smokey Jr.
But this is for him mainly, and all these excited Georgia fans coming this fall. I'm a huge Braves fan, and I pay attention to Georgia sports. It's not possible for the state of Georgia to have two multiple good sports teams in the same current year. I mean, that's fact. I'm sitting back and waiting to see how the Hawks do. But if the Hawks...
Well, they've already done better than I think anyone, Will, thought they were going to do. That's really... Hey, thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. Gerald is up next in New Jersey. Hello, Gerald.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Good. Hey, Paul, you know, I'm a native Memphian like you, and I got to tell you, man, I really appreciated, you know, listening to Bill Battle yesterday. It brought back good memories on Sundays watching the Bill Battle show.
Oh, yeah.
And the Grambling Football show. So that
I do. Awesome. Boy, you're right. You know, people don't realize, you know, we used to watch the games on Sunday, not on Saturday, because there was only one or two games on. And Grambling had a national network of its replay every Sunday morning in most markets in the country.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed that. And one other quick thing, Paul, and I'm going to just mention this and I'll hang up. So the college football playoff, and so we've been talking about this, and any idea how much of an economic impact college football has in America? Because when I think about not only just the gate, you think about the other industries, it seems like eventually we're going to have to pay these players because it's just it's a lot of money. So I don't know if there's
it's really, if you just look at the individual community, like a Knoxville, Tennessee, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama, I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. And I remember we had that conversation last year when we found out that there wouldn't be crowds or there may not be any football at all. We had a number of mayors on who did some economic impact projections, and it was frightening how much money. You just think about, I mean, we all kind of take it for granted. I mean, let's say you go to a game in Knoxville, you know, hotels, gasoline, convenience stores, restaurants, gift shops, sporting goods, retailers. I mean, there's so many tributaries that are affected that employ so many different people. And that was one of the tragedies, among others, of last football season. Thank you very much. And I mean, there's a lot of other, there's a lot of issues that come with that. But, you know, I think this year, you know, thank goodness we're not having that conversation. Let's check out Steve, who is up next. Hey, Steve, thank you, and good afternoon.
Hello, Paul. How's it going?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Well, I only had a couple things to say, but I got one extra since our earlier caller. But if they're going to change the college football playoff, then two things that I've heard not mentioned that they've got to change is, one, they got to get rid of that god-awful trophy and come up with a different trophy. And number two, if they're going to have the quarterfinals, they need to have those at the home stadiums, because otherwise the top four that get a bye, they'll never play in their home stadium.
Yeah, Steve, the reason why that's absolutely right. The reason why they did not announce that is that they have existing contracts with all these bowl games, and they are trying to satisfy those contracts. Quite frankly, I think everybody just ought to, you know, throw out the contracts. I mean, sometimes to move forward, you just have to bite the bullet and say, okay, well, I know what it says, but I'm going to let you out of it. But that is one of the obstacles right now, because it is simply not fair. If you're the number one seed and your opponent has played at home in week one and then you're suddenly meeting in Atlanta. Quick break. We have a long way to go on this program. We'll talk to Ross Dellinger in a few minutes about the NIL.